Hello, this is Ashley. Welcome to the Through Every Season podcast. Everyone is welcome here, and it's a safe space for you to explore your faith in God. We all go through different journeys in life. That includes highs, lows, and everything else in between. Grab a drink of the day, a snack, and take a seat. We'll help you walk through every season. Welcome, Stacy, to the Through Every Season podcast. I'm so stinking excited to have you on the podcast just to talk about your story, which is just so mesmerizing and so interesting. Stacy, do you kind of want to introduce yourself to everyone?
Thank you for having me, Ashley. I'm thrilled to be here and to talk with you and, you know, have the listeners hear what we have to say. Because, yeah, there's a lot to talk about. Like you said, my name is Stacy Sanchez. I live in Arizona and it is 110 degrees already. Yes, it's stinking hot. We're ready for summer. We're strong out here. Let's see, I'm a pastor. I'm a wife to my husband of 37 years. I have 4 children and then 1 stepdaughter. So 5 together. I have 9 grand cherubs whom I just were so yummy. They're yummy. They're the cutest. I'm sorry. They're the cutest. And let's see, I write about Christian nonfiction topics. And right now my focus is on grandparents raising grandchildren and the epidemic that is happening right now in our country and the need for grandparents to have to step in and take children that they weren't expecting to take.
Welcome again, Stacy.
Thank you.
We've already kind of dove a little bit into some of the topics that we'll be discussing today, but we're glad to have you. I hope you're not melting. I'm in Ohio, so it's definitely not 110 degrees, but if it was, I would think I was dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you do. And we own an air conditioning company, so that helps.
You know what? You're never going to go out of business if you're in Arizona and you have an air conditioning company.
No, we're smart like that. We figured out a business that won't go out of need.
I love that. Well, of course, everybody knows we do drink of the day around here. Mm-hmm. And so, Stacy, do you have a drink of the day to share with us today?
Yes. Well, it's not very exciting, but I have Diet Dr. Pepper, and it is something I think I'm pretty much held together with Diet Dr. Pepper and peanut butter. So I'm drinking my Diet Dr. Pepper and a lot of it because it's hot.
Oh, that kind of sounds good. A Diet Dr. Pepper. I feel like this is a Utah thing, but I've recently seen it online. But people like to use Dr. Pepper to go in like a dirty soda. Have you heard of dirty sodas?
No.
So, of course, in Utah, they have, the most Mormons per capita, I guess you could say, or LDS per capita. So a lot of people who are LDS don't drink coffee. Instead, they have, instead of their coffee shops, they have what's called dirty sodas because they still drink soda. So they have like different sodas mixed with like different syrups and then creamer. So instead of, putting creamer in your coffee, you're putting creamer in your soda. It's kind of like a float, but not ice cream. So a lot of people, they take Dr. Pepper and then they'll put like a little bit of vanilla and then they'll put creamer in it.
Never heard of that. I might have to try that.
There you go.
Interesting. Well, you taught me something.
There you go. So that when I hear Dr. Pepper, that's what I think of because I see all the little videos of people making it online. You know, I don't even know what's classified as a mocktail. I know a cocktail obviously has to have alcohol of some sort.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah, you'd think. But my drink doesn't have alcohol in it, hence why it is a mocktail. Yeah. But I'm going to call it a mocktail because it can be anything that it wants to be. So I mixed together a little bit of organic cranberry juice, a little bit of like organic pomegranate juice, and then I put cherry limeade poppy in with it. So
really?
Are you familiar with poppies?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody on the podcast knows what a poppy is because I constantly talk about them. I love poppies. So yeah, I have that instead of alcohol, I guess. So
interesting.
There we go.
You're a very interesting person just teaching me all kinds of things today.
I'll have to try that too. Pop culture.
I'm just old. Sorry.
You're not old.
Around you youngins.
You're only old if you think you're old.
Well, then I'm a baby.
So online and on your different platforms that you have, You speak about your experience becoming a mother when you were a teenager. So, what age did you become a mother, or you became pregnant, and what did your life look before your pregnancy as a teenager?
Well, it was your basic childhood. My mom and dad were divorced, and so I was a product of divorce, and then my mom got remarried. So I grew up with a stepdad, and I was just graduating high school. So I think I was 17. This makes me think exactly what age I was. I was 17, had just graduated high school, looking forward to college, and then, not having a dad that wanted to be around, he left and didn't have anything to do with me. And my stepdad, he was really hard. He was really, really hard to live with. I was just longing for love. And so I found it in the guy who promised he would never leave me. I can even hear him saying it now, "I'll never leave you, baby." Yeah, famous last words. And I got pregnant. And so with all those dreams of getting married and having a family and everything, walked out the door with him when he found out I was pregnant. And so I was on my own. And it was scary to be a teenager, because here you think you're going to go off to college or whatever, and those plans just went poof. And I know a lot of people have gone on to go to college and have been pregnant, and God bless them, but it wasn't my call. I just couldn't.
And with your family, or mainly your mother, since I know your father wasn't as involved, were they supportive of you through your pregnancy and then after you had your child?
Yeah, my mom was great. She was really great. From the moment I told her, I sat her down, I go, and I knew I was pregnant, but I said, "I think I'm pregnant." And she was so good. Oh my gosh. And I was worried about how she would be, because we were very involved in church. And I grew up in church, and my mom was an elder, and she ran the children's department. So she had to go to the elder board and tell them my daughter's pregnant, and she didn't know what would happen. But she was so supportive. My stepdad was supportive too, but in his own rough way. My dad didn't even know until years later. He was busy raising his family, so he didn't even know. But yeah, they were supportive. And my church, oh my gosh, they went above and beyond for me to show me how loved I was. And they, oh my gosh, they showed me what grace was, because, here I was, this, had a scarlet A on my chest, that, oh, I'm a sinner. And they didn't treat me like that at all. They threw me three huge baby showers. Three huge baby showers. I had so much stuff. And we thought I was going to have a girl. When I had my sonogram, the sonogram tech said, "It's a girl." So I had pink everything. And one lady made me a pink bassinet that was gorgeous with bows and roses. And here comes out my baby boy. He was the cutest little thing in pink and yellow. He's a manly man now. But so they just went above and beyond to love me and taught me what it was like to be Jesus with skin on.
That is absolutely beautiful. I feel you hear a lot that people are so scared to have a baby out of wedlock or have a teenage pregnancy, be in the church community because they're so afraid of judgment or being turned away or being exiled or shunned or whatever it is. But I love that your church did exactly what they were supposed to do. They supported you and they gave you grace and they showed you love. And I think that that is absolutely amazing. I also will say, I feel like my mom has told me that decades ago that the ultrasounds weren't as accurate with the genders as they are now. So
No.
some people wouldn't find out the gender until they had their baby, like my mom did with me. Or sometimes they thought that they were going to get one baby and they got the other, so they would buy gender neutral clothes.
It was just coming out, and she bet me a trip to Hawaii that, oh yeah, this is a girl. This is a girl. Well, he's all boy.
Definitely a boy, and now a very manly, masculine boy.
Whatever that looks like, but yeah.
Even though he would have had all of the bows and the pink
Oh,
and
yeah.
the
He
everything.
would have been so pretty. His name was going to be Hope Ashley, bringing hope from ashes. He didn't fit that when he came out.
No, probably didn't look like a Hope Ashley.
No, great name though, huh?
That is a pretty name. So I know you had mentioned that with your story didn't involve going to school. after you had your son, but what did your life look like after you had your son as you were transitioning from high school into post-graduation?
That's a good question. My life changed because I started not focusing on me as well I should have, and I focused on to my son. And I got little jobs here and there. And 8 months pregnant, I met my husband, whom I'm married to today. And he walked up to me and he put his hands on my belly and he said, "When are you going to have this thing?" First off, you're touching my belly. Who are you? And gosh. So from that moment on, we were together, and he has raised this child as his own. They don't know any different. It's his dad, that's his son. And so that's how my life changed. I went on to become a mom, and we had more kids. And I went right in. I had four kids by the age of 23. And so I know I was a busy woman. So that's how my life changed. It became more focused and narrowed in on family life.
So, if you had four kids by the time that you were 23, when did you and your husband get married?
I met him at 20. Yeah. And so I think I was 21. So we were very quick. Very quick at it.
That's so cute. That's such a cute story. Touched your belly. And he wasn't
Yeah.
afraid either. He didn't see you and go,
No.
oh my gosh, like, I don't want to get together with her. Like, he just embraced you. That's beautiful.
Yeah, he just knew. And I remember going out to lunch with him one time. I go, "People around are going to think this is your baby." And he goes, "Good."
That's cute. That
Yeah.
that's so cute. And I know you said, through your pregnancy, you're really supported by your church and you had all of that love, you had all of that support. In terms of your personal faith, what did that look like from your pregnancy all the way through, finding the love of your life, getting married, having three more children? What did it look like through that span of time?
Well, it had highs and lows and stuff like that. And I was always a person of faith, strong faith. And then when this happened, I was upset and thought, "God, why can everybody sin, but my sin has to show? This is the one that has to show, and everybody has to look at me and, see I'm a sinner." I wouldn't even think of that of anybody right now, but back then they did. And so, it waned once in a while. But it was always still there. Can I tell you a story about what happened once?
100%, you don't even have to ask.
Oh, okay. So when I first found out I was pregnant, I was devastated. Oh my gosh, my life is going to change. What is, and I felt bad about myself, and I was a mess. So I went into my bedroom and I hit the floor on my knees and I just cried and I was bawling. "God, what is going on?" I did this to myself. It's not like something he put upon me, but I was blaming him for allowing it to happen. And I was just crying and felt so alone. I told God, I just feel so alone. The guy left. I feel so alone. And I was by myself in my bedroom and I felt this feeling of an embrace, like somebody was hugging me, like there was arms around me. And it startled me. And I looked around, nope, nobody was in there, but that feeling was real. That was real. And so that grounded me in my faith that he's not leaving me. I'm not doing this alone. He's here with me. So that strengthened me to remember that feeling when I started feeling low. He's here.
That's a beautiful, beautiful story. Just how God touches us sometimes in our most vulnerable moments. He's there. He's there with
Right.
us and almost like an embrace. It's like his presence embraces us. Like what you said, it felt like he was hugging you. On your website, it touches on the fact that you have a blended family and adoption is a part of your story. What does your adoption story look like?
Well, I had three boys and wanted a girl so badly. I was going to get this girl, by hook or by crook. I'm getting a girl somehow. And we got news that my husband's brother abandoned his little girl. She was three. And they had been neglecting her, and she'd been through some serious hell that a little girl should not go through at three. And think of the trauma she experienced it. So we found out that he was going to jail for this. And my husband's mom, he had the little girl, but she was older and sick and couldn't take care of her. And I thought, God's provision, right? Here we go. Yay, God. So I thought, all right. Let's go up there and get her. Somebody has to fight for this little girl, and I'm gonna do it. And so we went and got her, and She had so much trauma and so much baggage that needed to be healed that no matter how much I fought for her and got her the help I thought she needed, it wasn't enough. It was a struggle. So for 18 years after that, I had to fight. It was a fight. We fought and all the way up, and she did some serious damage to my children and to my relationship with my husband, and some other people have been touched by her trauma. I mean, it was 3 years old, and you would think that it would have been young enough to be able to help heal and, she would have a good life. Well, no, the body remembers the trauma. The mind remembers the trauma. It was already imprinted on her at that young age. And so we thought, well, we're taking her out of this. We're just going to love her through it. Well, she ended up to go back into it. So it wasn't the easiest adoption story. And it's still not. I'm still fighting for her.
It is interesting, you bringing up trauma and how really at any age our body can hold on to that trauma. Our minds can hold on to that trauma, even if we don't have the mental capability to remember it like a really young child or a baby. So interesting. And I've noticed with my clients that I have with my mom's with substance use, I just sat down with a mother last week, last Friday, going into treatment. I was her support person, and they were asking about her ACEs or adverse childhood experiences, which is all about trauma. And, she had mentioned that both of her parents both struggled with addiction, and now she also struggled with addiction. And that is probably every single one of my clients and people that I come into contact with. They have some terrible type of trauma of some sort that just follows them, even if they were in the foster system themselves and they had other parents than their birth parents, they still ended up in the same cycles that their birth parents did, even if they weren't raised by them, which is just crazy.
It's just astonishing that they can come out of it, not have any experience, have the complete opposite, but then go right back into it. And it breaks my heart. And I want to ask these people that what happened to you that this is the way, addiction or whatever, this is the way that you want to find healing. It had to be so bad. And I just want to love them. It's heartbreaking. And so
It's
many
very
people look at them
heartbreaking.
like they're broken or the bad. No, they're experiencing trauma and they need healing and love and acceptance. They're hurting.
In terms of adoption, going through the adoption process yourself as a parent, what are some of the challenges or misconceptions that other people have about adoption?
Well, I can tell you my misconception of it was that my love and strength and guidance would save her, and I was going to be able to love her through this. My love was enough, and she was just going to be surrounded by this loving family, and that was going to be enough. And she needed more and needs more than I can give. She needs some Jesus and a whole lot of therapy. And that was my misconception. I thought love was going to be enough, and it wasn't.
And from your work with other, and I know we'll probably get into this a little bit later too, but with your work with other grandparents and mentoring and kind of being a support system for other grandparents raising their own grandchildren, do they kind of have that same experience where they took a child in that either wasn't theirs biologically or maybe it was, part of like a kinship situation? And they thought that they could save the child and they'd grow up and would be this, president of the United States of America, whatever it is. Did they have that same misconception beforehand?
A lot do. I can't speak for all, but a lot do. Yeah, because I think, but then there's also the other side of it that you start feeling guilty. Well, I couldn't love my daughter enough through it. What makes me think I can do this for my grandchild? So, there's this balancing act of I can save them, love's enough. I love these grand cherubs. And well, I didn't do it with my daughter, so there's this tug of war.
How did you incorporate faith into your family?
Well, faith in Jesus is just who we are. It's what we do as a family. And I raised my children to love Jesus, and they do. I'd say that my daughter is working on her testimony. She knows Jesus. She's just working on her testimony right now. So it's not a matter of incorporating faith into our life. Our family is an expression of our faith, and it's just a matter of who we are.
I love that you said that she's working on her testimony right now. That gave me chills. Because you have to have faith that they'll come around. You
She,
just
yeah, I
have to.
mean, God has done bigger things. This is nothing. This is
Exactly.
nothing, and I just pray that she accepts what he's offering.
Yeah, I see it all the time. People can recover.
Yeah,
They can
all the
recover.
time.
They can completely change their lives around. It can happen no matter how far they're gone or no matter what they've
Oh.
done.
Oh, it's nothing to God. It's nothing to Jesus. This is nothing. You know, what they're experiencing has not knocked God off the throne. And he hasn't said, oh, look what she just did. I what didn't see that coming. No, of course not. His love is deep enough for the darkest pit.
I love that. I love that. And I love that you continue, and as you should, of course, as a mother, continue to have that faith that, she's going to come around.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a testimony that she can share someday and help other people. What advice would you have for other parents who want to incorporate Jesus into their families?
In the adoption story, or just incorporating them in general?
Just in general.
What advice? Just be real. Just be real with your faith, because it's not always easy, and it's not this cute Pollyanna kind of everything's going to be happy, clappy, fine. You accept Jesus and the world changes for you. No. What happens usually is you accept Jesus and things get harder sometimes because you're learning to be more Christ-like, and that journey of learning to die to yourself and your wants and your needs and your, dreams and align yourself with him can be hard. And dying to yourself, when you die, you stink. Sometimes that process stinks. So, incorporating Jesus into it, just know it's not always going to be easy, but that's when you know you're doing it.
That's great. That's really great advice, because I think some people, when they think of a Christian family, they think of like the news,
Yeah.
everybody is set around the kitchen table and there's a
Yeah.
miraculous roast on the table and they're all dressed wonderfully and then they're all bowing their heads to pray and everything is perfect. Or like Brady Bunch, like if you think
Wouldn't
everything's
that be
perfect,
great? Wouldn't
right?
that be great? No, that wasn't my family. Yeah, I made amazing meals, I guess. I hate cooking, but I made meals. And we tried to sit around the table, but most of it is me throwing Jack in the Box back to the kids in the back of the van going from practice to practice, and here, hurry up and eat your fries. That was most like it.
I love that. Thank you, Jesus, for blessing my family with these French fries. What would be your piece of advice for someone who is considering doing adoption, whether this would be a kinship situation or somebody that is a part of their family, or maybe they're going into an adoption with a child that is not a part of their family?
Adoption can be a beautiful experience, wonderful experience. I've heard wonderful stories and testimonies of how God has transformed people because of, adoption and stuff like that. And we are adopted into God's family. So that's a beautiful testimony of him taking us and transforming us and, being loved in that family. I thank God for people who have chosen adoption to give their child up for adoption and, families that have been created with that. Beautiful, beautiful. Go into it with your eyes wide open. My daughter's pain affected the other children in the family, and it affected my husband and I. And she accused my husband of things that didn't happen. And she tried, it was just hard from the beginning. So go in with your eyes wide open. You can't, or no, nor should you be all things to this child. You can only do your best and let God do what you can't do. That's my piece of advice. Just go in with your eyes wide open. This is not going to be easy. There could be a lot of hard.
I think that's really great advice and very realistic advice too, because it's not all rainbows, unicorns, and sunshines and pink bows.
No.
There's a lot to it.
Yeah, it's messy. It can be ugly. There's some seriously ugly truths that I've had to deal with my daughter. Seriously ugly things that I never thought I would see or have to experience, because trauma is ugly and it's going to come out one way or another.
So on your different platforms and what you're able to share with your community and those who are seeking a community, you have a blog called Parenting Again that
Yeah.
discusses your experience raising your grandchildren. You also discuss that this is due to his mother experiencing addiction. This also means that, you're coping with being the mother of a child who has addiction, which is a whole different coping and grief in itself. What has it been like loving somebody with addiction?
Horrifically hard, horrifically hard, gut-wrenching, painful. One of the hardest things I've ever done. To love a child and see their potential and not get them to see it, not get them to be able to love themselves, what you see, you love. And it's like, don't you see how beautiful you are? Don't you see your heart is, you have such a good heart and you care for people. And, can't you see that? But they can't because the protection is there. The calloused heart's there to protect them of those, of the vulnerable feelings. And that is gut-wrenching. And, my daughter, I don't know where she is. The last time I talked to her was 2 years ago from jail and on Christmas Day, and she ended up hanging up on me because she was mad at me for something. It's always the mother's fault. No one ever gets mad at my dad or at their dad. I don't get it. It's always the mom. So she ended up hanging up on me, and so I haven't heard. And so there's times when I lay in bed at night and, I'm in a warm bed and I wonder, is she warm? Is she on the street? How is she surviving? Because she is in survival mode. She's got to be. So it's hard. And the pictures that you put in your head of what might be happening aren't pretty as well. I feel for those that are struggling with addiction. I really do. And then I really feel for those that are trying to love them and help them because there's nothing you can do other than we say the trite thing, I'm going to pray. Well, that's your biggest weapon, but that's it.
If you don't mind, sharing, how long has she been struggling with this disease?
Let's see, she's 35 now. So she's been struggling all since teens. Been struggling that long.
Has she ever went into a treatment program of any sorts?
Yeah, we've sent her to places when she turned 18. We sent her to a wonderful place called Mission Messiah in Texas, in Odessa, Texas. And she got kicked out of that because she was prostituting at night. And she's been in other treatment facilities, the court mandated treatment facilities, and nothing has helped yet. Yet, like I said, working on her testimony.
Exactly. When she's ready to go to treatment and ready to change her life, it will all work out.
For sure. And I keep thinking, how far is rock bottom? Because I'll think, oh, this is it. That's not it. Getting her son taken away, that wasn't it. The pain is so deep that it's hard to crawl out of sometimes. And then, the drugs or the alcohol just cover it. And it helps. It does help until it doesn't help.
Exactly. Exactly. That, yeah, it's so sad to see other people struggling with addiction, and then they're also, they're struggling with human trafficking or, sex work, and then homelessness on top of that. It's really sad to see people such a deplorable condition and think, oh my gosh, how did you get here? What's your story?
I did things, because of my pain. I could have seriously gone down that path. Grace of God, I didn't. It was only God
Exactly.
because I've done s silly, stupid things. Thank God there wasn't internet back then.
Oh. Big question, and I'm sure you get it all of the time. How is parenting your grandchild different from grandparenting your children, if there is a difference?
There's a big difference. When I was raising my kids, I didn't have to worry about internet problems. I didn't have to worry about, the pornography was just coming on the scene, and the internet stuff. I didn't have to worry about those kind of scary things until they got older and then it started coming out. My daughter really got into internet sex. Those kind of things, I don't understand the internet and social media and stuff as well as my grandchildren do. Oh my gosh, they're brilliant. My grandson, whom I'm raising, is brilliant. He found ways around locks that it's like if you would use this for good, you are brilliant. So that's different. I was also a A-type mom when I was raising my kids. If there was a room mom needed, I didn't do just one room mom. No, I did all four kids at the same time. And I put on parties that rivaled Martha Stewart. And that was before Pinterest. And it was amazing. It was amazing. So I was that mom. Now, raising my grandson. So there's a difference raising a grandson and having grandchildren, and what you have to be to both is different. So raising the grandson, I'm not as uptight as I was raising my kids. I can laugh more at situations. They don't affect me as much as they would have before. My son said the other day, "Hey, mom, when we were growing up, dad was the easygoing one and you were uptight. Now that's switched. You're the easygoing one." I'm like, "I know, I'm fun, darn it." But it, then it's hard with your other grandkids because they see you giving all this attention to this other grandchild that they can't have. And it breaks my heart because I love being with them. So I go overboard, show them I love them. You got to know this. I want that to be my legacy of how I love these grandkids. But so there's that tightrope I walk as well. So it's different.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even thought too. Of course, you said you have nine grandchildren, and vast majority of those grandchildren don't live with you. Your grandson does. So it's a completely different dynamic because one is under your house and the other is under your other kids, households. So that is a really different dynamic because maybe in their eyes as a child that maybe doesn't have that full picture, they might see, well, they live with grandma, so they get all the attention.
He gets all the fun stuff. Now he has now had to be placed into a mental health facility for sexually maladaptive behavior. So what my daughter perpetrated onto him, what she experienced, she perpetrated onto him, and
Oh
he's
my.
perpetrated onto others. So it's just that general or
Generational
generational
trauma, yeah.
person that just perpetuates. So he's getting help right now. So it's a little bit easier to focus on the other grandkids, but he still takes a lot of my time and emotion because I am the worst person on the face of the planet right now. All his anger is going at me, and it wears on me, and I'm still responsible, but I'm still trying to love him, fight for him, even though he doesn't see it.
Now, how old is he?
He's 14. Now he's
Oh,
14.
that's a hard age for a boy.
Exactly. My God, they're
Everybody says
close.
it is for girls, but I think it's hard for boys too.
Oh, for sure. They're trying to figure out who they are. And, the testosterone is
Oh
gone.
yeah.
And then, yeah. And now he's in this facility where he can't act out on things and learning proper ways to act. And so, yeah, he's an angry young man.
Sometimes we have to look at really hard situations and think, even if something doesn't happen, that God is still good.
Still good.
He's still good. Even if I don't get my prayers answered, it's still good. Even if something really bad happens, my worst case scenario, God is still good.
Yeah. When I don't get my prayers answered, he's good because he knows better. And then I look back and go, "Oh, thank you for not answering that one. What was I thinking?" His
Exactly.
protection, his benevolence, he's putting his arms around you and saying, "Nah, it's not for you."
And I think it's great too, with your grandson that you're putting him into treatment and you're trying to, have that kind of early intervention, if you will.
Yeah, that was the first thing we did. He was on all kinds of medication because my daughter just drugged him to keep him quiet. And so we had to take him off all that. And then we found a therapist for him. The problem is with grandparents raising grandchildren, we don't have the resources that, say, the foster care system has because they're backed by, governmental agencies, and they have places that these children can go, but grandparents don't. And we don't have the funds. We don't have the provisions. And when we do find therapy or a therapist, we're way down on the totem pole because DCS, Department of Children's Services, has first call at it. And so we're way down. So we have to wait. So we're not getting supported financially. We're not getting supported with services. And so we are just hanging here going, "This kid, somebody listen to me. Somebody listen to me. He's going to be a mass murderer. He's going to be the kid that shows up at school with a gun. Someone pay attention to this, please." And it's really hard on a grandparent, especially if you don't know what to do. There's no one guiding you. Like in the foster care, you get classes on how to raise a trauma child. And it's not a perfect system. I know. Believe me, I get it. But you're prepared for this child a little more. And then here, when you're raising a grandchild, here DCS comes and just drops them on your door and says, "Here you go." "Oh, okay, what do I do now?" So.
Yeah, definitely with resources, and that's something that I wouldn't have thought of either, but it's true. Even though everybody looks at our foster care system, and believe me, it's not perfect. Children's services is not perfect. It's far from it. But they still have a lot of resources because they're a governmental agency. And like, for instance, like if you have a child in the foster care system, You can get your child care as long as they still have an open case, child care paid for, or they can have access to Medicaid, and then they can have all these access to these different types of providers depending on what they need medically or mentally. And if you don't have a caseworker and you're not a child that of the state, if you will, you have to figure that out
You have to figure that out.
all of your own. And yeah, I agree. That would be really, really difficult because it's even hard for people professionally working in this space to navigate the system.
Yeah, it is. It's a crazy system and it's not set up well, and it does great work sometimes, but other times, people drop off and are, fall off the system. But I would love to see changes made for grandparents, because we're taking those children out of that system, and they're not, on the rolls anymore, and not the government's responsibility. We're taking that responsibility and saving them money. Let's just say we're saving them money by doing this, and we have nothing. We didn't plan to have a child at this age. There's great grandparents in their 80s. I know of a story of two people in their 80s, both in wheelchairs, raising three toddlers.
Oh my gosh.
And there's no resources for them, because they just, well, they're your grandkids.
That's
Just deal
sad.
with it. So there needs to be some sort of change. And I would love to figure out a way to make that known and get some people working on that.
Wow. That's just an excellent point about the lack of resources, lack of funding for resources too, I imagine, for grandparents raising their grandchildren. Had met with a children's services agency in a county in Ohio, in Fayette County, Ohio. Gosh, this was probably 2 years ago at this rate. And we were talking about what they were seeing with the children's services agencies. After COVID, they went, and they're a really small county. Like, this is a small rural county in Ohio. They went from having less than 50 kids in their system at a time to over 100.
I believe it.
And so their bandwidth of their staff, of course, was low because they had really, really high caseloads, and their reunification rate was also really, really small. It had shrank to, I think they said, less than 5% of children coming into the system were reunified with their birth parents. And they told me a statistic, and it always just always stood with me, that over 50% of the children in this county were being raised by somebody that was not their birth parent. So that could be grandparent, could be aunt, uncle, foster parent, cousin, whatever it is. But over 50% of the kids in that county, they were in the foster care system or had been in the foster care system at some point, which is crazy.
I believe it. And it's skyrocketing. Grand families, kinship caregivers are the fastest growing family group right now. I believe it.
Just absolutely, it's crazy. But you would think that because of that epidemic, there would be more resources out there.
Well, yeah, government isn't set up to, figure out these problems ahead of time. They're always
Oh no, they're
behind it.
slow.
They're slow. They're like, oh, there's an issue. We got to start thinking about that. And then there's all this red tape and
Oh yes.
bureaucracy we have to go through, and, all that kind of stuff. So, but if you think about it, these generation of kids that are in these kinships or foster care, grand family, they're going to come into adulthood and be a drag on society. Society's going to have to deal with this, whether if because a lot of them haven't had the trauma care that they need in the early intervention. And so, they act out on it. So our jail systems, our mental health facilities, our social networks are really going to be taxed if we don't do something right now to help these kids have an intervention now with these kids at a young age.
That's very true. You also hear that from school teachers too. How many of them are like literally dropping like flies? They're like, get me the heck out of here. Because I have to look at the cutoff for like the generations. Because your grandson, he would be considered Generation Alpha, right? He's too young for Gen Z, right? I think so.
I don't know what the next one down is, but yeah.
Yeah, the Generation Alpha. I've heard so teachers and educators talk about how with this upcoming generation, there are a lot of issues. Like they don't read at the level that they're supposed to, that they're almost, I don't use this word lightly, it's almost as if they are illiterate. Like they aren't really learning how to read or write or form proper sentences, and they have all of these behavioral problems.
And
And
forget about critical thinking.
oh yeah, forget about that. Mental health problems too. I think the youngest, again, it was also in Fayette County, Ohio. I'm sorry, Fayette County. They had told me that the Children's Services Agency had told me that this was probably 2022, that the youngest child that they had institutionalized for mental health was 6 years old. I didn't even know what mental health was at 6 years old.
Exactly. Yeah,
Crazy.
that is heartbreaking. Our society is going to have to live with these children that have been so wounded and have had to deal with this.
It's crazy. Yeah, we definitely need intervention yesterday, a week ago, a month ago, years ago, whatever.
Years ago. Let's start now, though. When's the best time to plant a tree? Yesterday and today.
If you're comfortable answering, what's the relationship? I know before your daughter kind of left to do whatever she was doing and left to do her own thing, what was the relationship like between your grandson and then your daughter?
Was tumultuous, but he is so codependent on her, just adores her, even though it wasn't very unhealthy. What she did with him was very unhealthy, or allowed to have happen to him. And but he just adored him because his father died of a drunk driving accident. He was the one that was drunk, and he was the only one that died. He didn't hurt anybody, thank God. So he doesn't have a father, so all he had was his mother for many years. And so it was not a healthy relationship. And now that she's gone, he doesn't understand because, she would used to tell him things like, I'll be your Superman. I'll come and get you if there's ever a problem. And, I'm always going to be there for you. And now she's gone. So he's angry about it. Very angry.
That's hard, and I don't typically hear that with kiddos with their parents. I do see a lot of codependent relationships with other people, but it's so interesting that you bring up that dynamic between a mother and son. Just because in my world, I see it between man and woman or whatever, intimate relationship of some sort.
It was like that intimate relationship. And then, she did a whole lot. She was diagnosed as a borderline personality disorder when she was in
That's
her
hard.
teens. So she did a lot of, come here, baby, I love you, I love you. And then go away. She would leave him on a park bench for overnight and just leave in the
Oh
middle
my
of the night. And he'd have
gosh.
to sleep there. He'd have to figure out food. And then he was the best thing ever. And then she'd leave him at somebody's house for to sleep on a couch he didn't know and then go drug deal or whatever she
That
was
breaks my
doing.
heart that he had to be in survival mode that young of an
4 years
age,
old.
4 years old. I sometimes wonder too myself, because most of my clients are unhoused or unstable housing. I work a lot with the homeless community in Columbus, and I sometimes wonder, if I was homeless, what would I do?
Be in
What would
survival
be
mode.
my plan of action? Like, where the heck would I sleep? And I like wonder, I'm like, I don't know how the heck I would do that. And I definitely wouldn't know what to do at 4 years old.
Exactly.
Oh my
And
heavens.
he did stuff he shouldn't. And why are we expecting anything different?
How has your faith supported you through raising your grandchild and also being a parent of someone with addiction?
My faith is everything. I could not do this without Jesus. Way back when he hugged me back then and I knew he wouldn't leave me, is that same feeling I have now, even when I'm at my wits' end. I was getting, for a while there, I was getting pictures texted to me by my daughter's pimp, pornographic pictures of my daughter. So seeing those things would have done me in, or making it out as if she was murdered. I was getting pictures like that. And so those kind of things would have done me in had it not been for my relationship with Jesus, to turn to him and say, I need you. I need you. And just by the way, it's okay to need Jesus and a therapist, because I highly recommend it. I needed both.
Oh wow, I cannot imagine receiving, well, one, pictures of that of any kind from anybody, but especially of your daughter, do you think, because I also, dip my toes in the human trafficking space because of the work that I do and the population that I work with. Do you think that her pimp was doing that as like a blackmail to control
Yes.
her?
Yes,
That's
she was
sad.
trying to break away and they were both in jail. He got out, she didn't get out. And when she was about to get out, she talked about going into rehab and he didn't want her to. He wanted her back.
Yep.
And so he was sending these pictures to me so that I, it was blackmail. Yeah, it was sex trafficking for sure.
Oh yeah, but that's heartbreaking. So you had mentioned on your website that there are over 2.7 million grandparents raising their grandchildren here in the United States of America. Not surprised about this statistic. As I said, why do you feel that we have an epidemic of grandparents raising their grandchildren today?
Well, there's a number of reasons. I believe the easy access to drugs and opioids, there's not help there. It's just, when people are overdosing or whatever, they just bring them back and let them go. There's not help there to get them off the drugs. Fentanyl deaths have skyrocketed. So there's kids with grandparents because of that. COVID deaths of parents, those are huge in aunts and uncles and grandparents raising their grandkids because their parents died from COVID is huge. Parent incarceration, things like that, mental illness, the breakdown of family unit and low church attendance is dropping. And we live in a culture that is a throwaway culture. There is like nothing that grounds you anymore to something that's bigger than yourself. And so you're it, and you have to deal with it. And there's nobody there to help show you that life's not all about you.
This is heartbreaking that our culture has fostered an environment where many parents aren't capable of being parents. Very sad.
It's interesting that, because they have easy access to abortion and stuff like that, and there's still this issue. So put them on birth control. We have access to abortion, but people are still having children. And I'm not saying I agree with all that. Don't get
Of
me wrong with
course.
that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I just find it ironic that it's so easy to just do that, but we still have this situation with children that are
Yeah.
in grandparents' care.
Yeah. I have noticed that, especially with those who, and it seems like an oxymoron, with those who are using substances or like they're unhoused, they often don't trust like the government. And so they assume that like birth control and other things are like dangerous. Oh, I don't
Yeah,
want to do that.
that's
I don't want to
dangerous.
put that into my body, but then they also use, things that could kill them.
Well, it's because it's masking a pain. The other isn't masking a pain.
Very good point.
So, yeah.
Yeah, believe me, I wouldn't have a job if it wasn't a problem.
Yeah,
So
for sure. Well, I hope someday we work you out of a job.
you know what? That'd be my best case scenario because it
Yeah.
breaks my heart too. You give a lot of advice and insight online surrounding raising grandchildren. If you had to give one single, your absolute best piece of advice to a grandparent currently raising their grandchild, what would it be?
Do I have to narrow it down to one? Okay. Well, I might narrow it down to one and then expand.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
We'll allow it.
Oh, good. Thank you. Give yourself grace because this is hard. This grandparenting your grandchildren, it is hard no matter what reason that you have these grandkids, even, kinship caregivers, aunts, uncles. It's hard to be raising children at your age. And there's so many emotions that go into it: anger, resentment, bitterness, guilt, love, sadness, broken heart, depression. Many grandparents go into depression. I did. Joy. All of them can be all at the same time. So it's necessary to give yourself grace, and it's okay to mourn your situation because you're mourning the death of your dreams, the death of what you thought your life was going to be like, your hopes. You're mourning all of who you thought you were going to be at this stage. I raised my kids and now I have to do it again. And like me, I raised this daughter who was so hard. And I thought, oh, I'm free. I'm free. And here I go again. And I was angry. about it, and it went into a depression big time. So find a community so you're not alone. Don't do this alone. There's grandparents communities in all different states. Find those and do it with Jesus, because you can't, I cannot do this without him.
I think that's excellent advice. And maybe that will also inspire somebody to maybe you're a part of a church community and you want to start a support group out of your church, which is specifically, for, and maybe it doesn't even have to be grandparents. Maybe it can be kinship, kinship givers or kinship people. Or, when you were describing kind of going through depression and going through a grieving process, it really reminded me of like postpartum depression. Like mothers also grieve what their life used to be before they had a child, and they can go through depression. We have a lot of resources for mothers who are going through postpartum depression or perinatal mental health, at least a lot more resources than what we did even 5 or 10 years ago. Definitely need more resources for grandparents because it's kind of like going through the postpartum period again, except you weren't physically pregnant beforehand.
Wow, where's my pen? I'm writing that down. That's really good. I hadn't even thought about it. That's really good.
That's
And
just what came to
you
my mind as you
sometimes,
were talking.
and sometimes those are chemical imbalances, but you're right. Like, I didn't expect to be up 3 times, 4 times a night with this crying baby. I thought, they would go to sleep perfectly. And there's the chemical imbalances. Well, as you get older, you have those chemical imbalances too, because do you know what it's like having menopause and a newborn?
Oh my
You don't
gosh.
sleep already because you're already going through
And
the
in hot
menopause.
flashes.
And then, you finally doze off, and here's this newborn waking up. And so having menopause, having to cut coupons for Depends and diapers is no fun. And
No.
that's where people find themselves.
I just want to thank you, Stacy, for coming on
Oh my
the
pleasure.
podcast. We had such great discussions today. We even went down some paths that I didn't think that we'd necessarily go down today. Sometimes God just leads the way. Leads the conversation and leads the way. And I know people, they needed to hear the information today. They truly did. And I hope it touches other people. And I know it will. I know you're going to help so many people, like you already have through what you've done on your different platforms. Which, by the way, if people want to follow you, if people want to receive the support and the different information and guidance that you have, where can they find you?
Well, I made it really easy for him. It's stacysanchez.com is my website. I thought long and hard about the name of that website. Stacy Sanchez, Sanchez, Sanchez. And I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm mostly on Facebook though, because grandparents at that age tend to go towards Facebook instead of
Very true.
Instagram. So, I'm mostly there, but I am on Instagram as well. And I started a page on Facebook for grandparents raised or kidship givers called Parenting Again: Perspectives on Raising Grands. So you can find me there under Parenting Again. And on my website, I have a free downloadable printable thing about, it's a checklist for what a child can do before they get onto electronics. So they can just check
Wow.
off, did you do this? Did you do this? So it helps you get through the summer without saying, can I get on my, did you just point to the chart on the fridge? Did you do all these things? And then we'll talk about it. So you can download
Everybody
that. So
needs to
when you
download that.
subscribe, I hope my husband does. Oh my gosh.
I might need to download
Yeah. So when you go to my website, you can sign up and you'll get that free printable. And I'm also, because I'm a huge baseball fan, I'm a huge Yankee fan. Don't hate me. But through baseball season, I'm also doing a giveaway. If you sign up, I put your name into a hat and then draw names once a month for a $25 Amazon gift card. And I send that to
Ooh.
you. Yeah, and I've given out some of those already this spring's training and through the season already.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so sign up.
You heard it, everyone. Amazon gift cards, checklist that, tells you all the things that you should be doing besides scrolling on TikTok like me.
And then there's a thing, there's an, yeah, scrolling. My thumbs are tired from scrolling. But there's also a blog on there about 50 things that are free and extremely cheap that you can do with your child this summer to keep them busy. So you don't have to spend all the money and they stay off the electronics and off the TV,
That's
and something
great.
you can do with them.
That is great. Again, thank you so much, Stacey, for coming on here. When we close out, we always say you're welcome to explore your faith here. Jesus always welcomes you home, and so do I. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Through Every Season podcast. You can find new episodes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts on the second and fourth Friday each month. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook using the links in the podcast description. Do you want to come and tell your story or testimony? Fill out the drop form listed in the podcast description. We'll see you next time.